Well, good day, ladies and gentlemen. Happy Friday to you. Glad that you're along. It's Freeform Friday, which means I get to talk about whatever I want to. So we're going to talk today about politics and religion. You know the old saying, right? Those are the only two things you're not supposed to talk about. Well, you're going to talk about them because that's what we do. And those are both two big issues happening in the world today. So we're going to talk about how to talk about those things. But first, a couple of other things to kind of warm us up and get us going. Hey, Christian Cross, I don't know that I've ever seen your name on here before. Welcome. Glad that you're here. Hey, Lewis, Nathan and Dale. Good to see you all as well. So it's the first Friday here of April. That means we are one quarter into the year of our Lord 2024. And if you were with us at the beginning of the year in January, I challenged you to think about some of the basic aspects of our lives, dealing kind of with our body. Because remember, this is the one tool we have to interact with the world. This is the one tool we have to do anything. We have our inner man, we have our mind, but our body is what actually gets the stuff done that our mind thinks of. Now, maybe that's going to change with the Neuralink, and it is pretty amazing. Did y'all see that? The guy, the first real test case, didn't he? Did he play a video game and compose some, I don't know, X post or something with just thinking about them? Play chess? Did he play chess? Did I see that? Did he play chess just by thinking about where he wanted his characters to go? Something along those lines. Anyway, so the future is going to be very interesting when it comes to those things. But for most of us, our body is how we interact and do what we're called to do and serve others and so on. And we need to take care of our body. It's the one instrument we have to interact with the outside world. So I challenge you, focus on sleep, diet, and lift some heavy weights. How you doing? How are you doing with keeping your instrument sharp and well-oiled and taken care of? Are you giving due attention to your body so that you can be healthy and get the things done? You know, energy levels are affected by all those things. Sleep and diet and muscle mass, our hormone levels, men and women. For men, our testosterone is significantly impacted by those three things. And for women, your hormones are also affected by those things. So anyway, just kind of a check-in. It's easy, you know, we make plans, kind of like your Bible reading plans. You make plans, you set out to do something, and then, you know, January is sort of the time we do that, and then it fades off because we aren't really committed to it. Anyway, so check in. If you set out to do some things earlier in the year and you let them fall off, let me encourage you to take time today, this weekend, to recommit yourself to them and to apply yourself. It matters. It's important. And if you have been consistent, take some time to reflect on the first quarter of the year and say, okay, what did I do well? How can I do better? Just enjoy the fruit of your labors and your work, your hard work you put in. So I think it's worth giving some thought to. That leads me to the second thing I want to mention is, so last night I had the worst night's sleep I've had certainly in a week or so. And I mean, it was just awful. Yeah, I don't feel very good. That's I just didn't sleep hardly at all. And that happens to all of us. It happens to me fairly often. And what I'm learning to do, and I almost said I have learned, but this is not always true. I've learned to be somewhat sleepy self-aware. By that, I mean this. We are tempted, at least I am, and I'm assuming you're similar. We are tempted to things when we are sleepy that we're not tempted to so much when we've gotten good sleep in recent nights. And this kind of plays into, you know, even what I was saying a minute ago about not only keeping our body sharp and getting sleep for hormonal reasons and that and energy and alertness, but also just to fight off temptation. You know how it is with kids. If you've had little kids, sometimes they get really cranky and whiny. What they really need is just a good night's sleep. Well, we're the same way. So on days like today, when I didn't sleep much, you know, I do these live streams 5 days a week. So I'm thinking, okay, I'm about to talk to hundreds of people. And it's going to be recorded on video for for posterity forever. I don't want to say things I don't mean. So sometimes my brain and mouth connection is not strong when I'm sleepy. And I'm tempted to react to things, make assumptions about what people mean, like in the comments. You know, tempted to be kind of testy and take offense at things when they're not meant that way, to interpret others a certain way. Tempted to not do some of the things I should get done because I'm tired, I'm sleepy. Now, I'm all for naps. I like naps. So that, I don't count that as unproductive. Actually, that helps me be more productive. But you know what I mean? The temptation to just need to sit and veg and the extra energy it takes to do the things you need to do. We got to be aware of those things. And one of the things I try to do in mornings like this is just take a few moments and just admit it. I'm tired. I'm sleepy. And think about the people I'm going to interact with today. I'm going to interact with my wife and my son, his wife. And we typically have, you know, Friday pizza and movie nights here as a family. And sometimes we have some close friends or like family come over and join us. And I'm going to interact with them. And I'm going to interact with you. And I tend to take some time and say, okay, I'm sleepy. Listen very carefully when people speak and watch yourself to not assume their motives, and don't hear things they're not saying, and so on. Not put myself in positions where I'm tempted to things. Do you ever feel that? Do you know what I'm saying? I know you feel the sleepy part. Do you give attention? Do you take time to make sure that you are in control of your thoughts and your words when you're tired? Now, there are other stimuli for this kind of thing. It may not always be sleepiness. If you're really discouraged, you know, something disappointing happened. Maybe, I know something at work, you thought you're going to get promoted, or you thought you're going to be applauded for some project you got done and you didn't get applauded, or you know, you didn't get the raise, you didn't get acknowledgement for something. Maybe it's in your relationships with your spouse. You had expectations of what they were going to do or not do, say or not say, and they didn't. Thought your husband was going to take you out last night for a date and he didn't. You know, now you're tempted to all kinds of things. Are you self-aware enough to pause and not let those situations and circumstances lead you into sin? It takes work, and I don't always do this successfully. But I'll tell you, doing the live stream does help me. So it's the kind of accountability that helps. Like, again, I'm thinking very carefully about what I say because I want it to be coherent and not be rude because I'm sleepy. And then it would be easy then to say, yeah, you know, I've got my reputation at stake with all of you if I'm rude. But what about with my wife? What about with the other people I interact with? Is it okay to be rude with them? No. So I would encourage you to give this some thought and somehow remind yourself when there are things that are when you are in a situation, in a place of temptation, not in the actual temptation, but the circumstances are you know those times, you know those triggers, so to speak, you know those circumstances that put you in a state where you are very vulnerable to temptation. Prepare as you enter those situations, prepare yourself for the temptations that will come, and you will sin less, and you will offend people less, and so on. Anyway, any thoughts? Anybody listening to this have any thoughts? Well, that leads me to the larger topic that I wanted to discuss. We are tempted to sin when we talk about religion or politics, whether we're sleepy or not, whether we're discouraged or not. For some reason, these two issues are the proverbial landmines when you're especially, family. We the proverbial don't talk about these things like at Thanksgiving or Easter, because you're going to have a lot of folks around who have strong opinions and disagreements, and but even with coworkers and neighbors, these tend to be inflammatory topics. And as Christians, we must talk about them. We must. They're both important. And we represent Christ, and these topics must be addressed. So we've got to figure out how to do it and do it well. And, here in America, for the next, how many months? 7 months. You are not going to be able to escape political discussion. I don't think you're going to be able to. So let's think through how to have these conversations as Christians. So one question that comes to my mind is, why is it so hard? Why is it hard to have these discussions? One reason is, I think, most of us speak about these things with strong conviction. If you are talking to a family member who is not a Christian, or who is a different flavor of Christian from you, in the sense of, so I'm doing this series, excuse me, I still have this lingering cough from the sickness I had weeks ago, but it still catches me when I talk. We're doing the series now on New Covenant theology. Well, obviously, I disagree with folks who come from a covenant theology or Reformed theology background, and I disagree with those who come from a dispensational theology perspective. I disagree. I think they are wrong in much of their understanding of the Bible. Well, guess what? They think I'm wrong. Right? So we're in the same position. We believe the other person is mistaken. They are wrong. When we have these conversations, though, we tend to speak with such great conviction that it provokes a response in the other person. We have this term that we use called being defensive. You've been defensive. You've probably been defensive this week. If you're married, your spouse has probably been defensive this week. Your kids, maybe, coworkers. Think about that word defensive. What is implied if you are defensive? That's not rhetorical. Think about it, and then I want to see your responses. What is implied when you get defensive? Now, I'm trying to be Socrates here and pull out a certain answer. So I don't know if my question is going to provoke it. So Lewis says offended. Okay. Good. Good. There's one specific word that I'm looking for. And if nobody gets it here in a moment, I will give you another clue that I think will provoke the right response that I want. Right, so let me say it this way. If you feel the need to put up a defense, what causes that? What causes us to put up a defense? Now somebody's going to get it. Right? You play games. Think about war. You know, we have here in the US the Department of Defense. What do we defend ourselves against with the Department of Defense or in a game if you put up your defenses? Yeah, good job, Christian. Attack. Right? That's what we mean when we talk about getting defensive. You get defensive because you feel that you are being attacked. Now I'm going to discuss this in the context of political and religious discussion, but this will if you meditate on this a little bit, this will change the way you interact with your spouse, with other close people. Whenever you feel defensive in any setting, whenever you get defensive, I should say, you feel attacked. Now, does that mean the other person is actually attacking you? No. But you feel attacked. That's why you're defensive. When you get defensive, you are moving further and further away from the realm of rational thought and more to the emotional, kind of the fight or flight. The adrenaline gets going. You feel the need to defend yourself, which is not the same thing as presenting a rational argument and allowing others to critique that argument, and you having the mindset of wanting to hear their argument and learning and realizing I might be wrong, so I want to hear their argument because I might be mistaken, or they might be mistaken, and maybe I can help them come to a rational, factual conclusion. That is not the perspective we have when we are emotionally involved. And every time you're defensive, you're emotionally involved and you move further down the line of irrationality and away from rationality. And I do too. We all do. Again, I have a context for this, but that truth, if you can let that settle into your mind, your relationships, how you interact with your wife, if you're a man or your husband, and your children, you'd be amazed at how often you feel defensive and how often you add to the problem because you feel attacked, even though you're not actually being attacked. So when we talk about politics, we talk about religion or anything where there's disagreement, try to grab control of your emotions there. And when you get defensive, say, whoa, in your own head, wait. Am I being attacked? Now, the other person is speaking with great conviction and they disagree with me. But is he attacking me? Does he want me to be injured? Is that the goal here? Is that the goal? Is he really seeking to do me harm? Is that why he is saying what he's saying? Right? I am arguing for New Covenant theology, and my I want to call him opponent. See how that works? My partner who disagrees with me is challenging some of my statements. Does he really want me to feel harm? Is he looking to tear me down? Now, sometimes that's true, but we tend to jump there instead of saying, no, they just disagree, and that's okay. Closely associated is, how often do you speak as though you can read someone's mind? Yeah, Anne says feelings are so unreliable, it would seem. Yeah, they are reliable to convey how we feel. That's about it. As far as the trustworthiness and the truth of things, feelings are not a good guide, right? How often are you convinced you know the motive of someone else's action or words? You know what they mean. No, they really do mean to hurt me. They really don't care about what I think. This is why they said that. This is why they said that. This happens to me all the time in the comments. Not so much the chat here, not the live chat, but in the comments. And as a professional teacher and preacher for 27 years now, this happens all the time. People hear things I don't say. They assume they know why I'm saying it. And then they jump on me. At least that's how it feels. Because they're convinced, yeah, you said this, but here's what you meant. Here's why you meant it. Like, no, I didn't mean that at all. If you can stop reading people's minds, especially in politics, do you really know the motive for our politicians? There are, and this is why the news and social media is so bad. People say inflammatory things because their financial well-being is contingent on the clicks and views they get and so on, right? Getting a following, getting clicks. And so the more inflammatory things they say, the more clicks they get. If people are getting paid for their opinions, you should at least be cautious. Man, my mind wants to go. I want to go down so many paths. Who's the guy? Is it Chris Cuomo? Is he the guy that was on CNN? And more recently, he got fired, right? Because his brother, the governor of New York, and some of all that. And did you see his interaction with Tucker Carlson? What, last week, I think it was. Their discussion was very different, it seemed to me, from what either of those guys said when they were paid network pundits. I thought they had a pretty civil discussion. They came to some common ground on some things. And neither of them had the same intense rhetoric that Tucker had when he was on Fox and Cuomo had on CNN. Why is that? Well, in Tucker's case, he's certainly still getting money for people watching his show there, but it is a little different. And as I understand it, they were sort of both told what they were supposed to say and not say on such. And Chris Cuomo seemed much more tame. And less inflammatory than he had been on CNN. Why were they that way on their networks? I assume because they were getting paid to take a strong opinion and say outlandish things and rip apart their opponents and that kind of thing. So all that to say, social media news, they are designed by and large today, it seems to me, not to actually convey factual information, but to cause people to react. We need to be better than that and be very careful how we react, because it's amazing how many people online are convinced they can read the mind and they know the motives of everybody who's doing everything. And I think we're better off saying, okay, I can't read your mind. Here's the decision you made. Here are the things you voted for. That's why I love that they, will publish who voted for what in the Congress, for instance, here in the U.S. You voted for this. I don't like that you voted for that. So therefore, I'm not going to vote for you. But why they do it? Speaker Johnson, there are some, he has made some strange statements, strange decisions, I should say. Major Taylor Greene, is that her name? Did she make a motion to vacate the chair? And she's been calling him out. And I saw somebody, might've been Tucker, I forget, somebody who said clearly he's been bought off. We know that. That's the only rational reason why he would do this. And then Matt Gaetz, who is in Congress, who had conversations with Johnson, said from his perspective, Johnson is doing everything he can to hang on to leadership because it would be easy if he doesn't give in to the left for them to replace him, and the majority is so thin. And he's basically trying to give where he can to maintain some leadership for the Republicans and so on. All that to say, now we have two very different stories as to the motive as to why Mike Johnson is leading the Congress, the House, the way he is. Are either of them right? Can Matt Gaetz or Major Taylor Greene read his mind? No. But we hear somebody say something and we're convinced they're right, and so now we start parroting them, I should say, and so on. Anyway, that's just a simple, we do this all the time with people in our households. We do this certainly with politicians. And this is some of what causes the friction when we are debate, because you've got the people that you follow politically, and your friend here has people that they follow, and they're different. And so you're just repeating what someone else has told you. Don't do that. It's fine to say, hey, I heard so-and-so say. I mean, Matt Gaetz, what he said makes sense to me. It makes more sense to me than that they've got dirt on Mike Johnson. I could be wrong. And Matt Gaetz could be wrong, or my understanding of Matt Gaetz could be wrong. I'm certainly happy to throw that out in a discussion with somebody and say, well, here's what Gaetz said. And it makes sense. But I can't be sure, and neither can you. So if you're discussing New Covenant theology with a covenant theologian, for instance, be careful about assuming that you know their motives. Oh, they just want this. They just want theonomy. They just want to bring back medieval Christendom. Now, if you got somebody like Doug Wilson who said that out loud, okay, now I'm not reading his mind. He actually said it. Does that mean that everybody who's in covenant theology is just following lockstep with that and believes it? No. What I found is a lot of covenant theologians haven't actually thought this through. So if you have a conversation and ask questions and don't assume motives and don't get defensive because they're not attacking you, they just disagree, you can often get to a place where you're having a constructive conversation and you learn more about them. And I'll tell you, the more emotional the issue, the more you have to try to bring the temperature down and not get defensive, not have your own inflammatory rhetoric. Let's take the issue of abortion for a minute. I would assume most of my followers are pro-life and would therefore believe that abortion is murder, right? Very few of the pro-abortion people I've talked to in my lifetime believe that it's murder. And what pro-lifers tend to do is say, you're committing murder, and therefore you need to go to prison as a murderer. And we who have no ability to enact a law to that end, all we do is argue about it. So we're arguing to someone who doesn't think it's a murder, and we're telling them they are murderers. Where is that going to go? Where is that going to lead? Is that going to lead to persuasion? Are you going to be able to persuade a pro-abortionist by telling them they're murderers? Never. All you're going to do is put them on the defensive because they feel attacked. They don't think they're a murderer. You just called them a murderer. You're attacking them. Of course they're going to defend themselves because they don't believe they're guilty of murder. They believe they're being falsely accused. That conversation goes nowhere. Have a conversation. Be willing to hear their perspective. If they are convinced evolutionists, and they don't believe that, you know, people have souls, for instance, you realize that's going to play into their view of abortion and any other, you know, euthanasia and any other death. And we come in with our, you're a murderer, life is sacred. That doesn't compute for them. They can't understand that life is sacred. Because nothing is sacred if you're an evolutionist. But we come in with our attack, and we really are attacking them. Now, leaders and decision makers, that's a little different. With lawmakers, right? Even here in the U.S., we have a constitution. And our lawmakers are supposed to support the Constitution. So this, like the debate about whether there's a God, it's in our Constitution, or at least in the Declaration of Independence. So to say, look, this nation was founded on the statement that our rights are given to us by God, we can stand on that. But when you're talking to an individual who has no influence, no power to make any legal decisions, and you accuse them of murder or supporting murder, you are not going to have a conversation that is constructive for anybody. And I don't know, we're often told that, you know, we've got to stand for our convictions and we can't be spineless and wobbly on these things. Well, I agree. So if I'm talking to someone who's pro-abortion, I'm not going to say, oh, you might be right. But that's not spineless to simply lay out your views, right? I don't have a spine simply because I accuse that person of murder. I'm not wishy-washy if I say, tell me what your understanding of life is. Tell me what you think happens in an abortion. They say, oh, well, the fetus is not a living soul, not a living person. It's not alive. It's not viable. And so it's, you know, no different than, having your appendix removed. It's just it's a part of the woman's body. Interesting. At what point do you see that part of the woman's body becomes its own body? Where do you see that? Is it at birth? And why? Then, you know, you can have conversations about that. And you might actually get somewhere because you might show them, I value you as a human being, which is my conviction that human beings are valuable. And I want to understand why you believe things the way you do. And what you're going to find is so often they don't know. I mean, you can all imagine a woman getting pregnant when she's 17. She doesn't want to have the baby because she is scared. She doesn't think she's capable of being a mother at that age. She's fearful for her future financial situation. She's embarrassed and ashamed because it's obvious now that she had sex when she's not married. And even though all the rhetoric of the culture says that's fine, she still feels shame because that's how this all works. I mean, you can imagine all the emotional things going on. She decides to have an abortion, and then she gets attacked by a pro-lifer who doesn't show any concern for her, just lashes out that you're a murderer. Now she's got to defend herself. And what is she going to do? She's going to steel herself in her conviction that abortion is fine and good. And she's not thinking through it rationally because the decision wasn't a rational decision. It was an emotional one. based out of fear and shame and uncertainty and all those things. And now you harden her in her conviction because you attack her and you assume you knew her motives. Oh, she's fine with killing babies. No, she's not. She just panicked. She freaked out. She didn't think it was a baby. And some of them live with guilt the rest of their lives because they know it was a baby. But when they get attacked, they feel like they have to defend because who's going to admit, yeah, I killed my baby? Well, we do this with all kinds of things in politics and religion. We do attack. And then when someone disagrees with us, we feel attacked. And so now we're at war. So is it possible to have these conversations? How about Donald Trump? Let's just throw it out there. Some of you have very strong convictions about Donald Trump. I've heard them. I've seen them. Some of you think he's our last hope. Some of you think he's basically the devil, wouldn't vote for him no matter what. Are you willing to have a conversation about him? Are you willing to hear someone else's perspective? Are you willing to give them the benefit of the doubt that their views of whether or not they can vote for him are worth hearing? Are you willing to simply say, hey, tell me more about this. Tell me why. Tell me why you would just not vote for anybody before you'd vote for him. Or tell me why you voted for him twice, you're going to vote him for the third time, and you can't imagine why nobody else would ever vote for him. Are you willing to have that conversation? Do you think you can read Donald Trump's mind? Well, time is fleeing. Last two points real quick. Number one, you can have these conversations and you can't control anybody else, but you can control yourself. Refuse to let this become an argument. Contentious argument. You can refuse to let that happen. I'm going to ask you questions. I'm going to share my beliefs. But as we do, you can get as animated as you want, but I refuse to let this become a contentious argument. You can do that. You can do that. It takes work. It takes a lot of self-control. But you can do that. And if you can, and you do that, you may find you can lead to a constructive conversation. And you might actually persuade somebody to change their mind. Or who knows, maybe you'll be persuaded. Maybe you'll find out, yeah, they have some points I hadn't thought of before. And finally, David Miller here says, we need to be kind despite all. Yep. And that nobody else's sins are greater than mine. That's not entirely true, is it? Have you murdered anybody? You don't have to answer that. But those sentiments are along the line of this last thing I wanted to say. My dad always told me, and I'm sure I know he didn't make this up because I've heard other people say it, but he always told me, win the man before you win the argument. I haven't always done that, but when I have been far more persuasive. I've won way more arguments if my first goal was to win the man. Well, how do you win the man? You are kind. You're gracious. Again, it doesn't mean you pretend like you don't have convictions. It doesn't mean you are afraid to state what you believe. No, state what you believe. And if they're going to get all bent out of shape over it, well, that tells you a lot about them. So I'm not suggesting at all that we withhold and refrain from speaking our viewpoint. But if your mindset is love and kindness, I want you to be heard. I care about your perspective, and I'm humble enough to say I might be wrong about this. And I trust you enough that you don't hate me even if you disagree on this. And I want to win your friendship and win your trust. That's how you win the man. Then they will listen to you. Sometimes it's phrased, nobody cares how much you know till they know how much you care. Again, there's some truth to that. So give this some thought. Give all this some thought. We have to talk about politics. We have to talk about religion. Those are two extremely important things. And if you are correct, then your voice needs to be heard. Don't shy away from the topics, but do so as a believer who is filled with the Holy Spirit, who shows grace and kindness, and is concerned about what is true, but also cares about the person that you're discussing this with. All right, our time is way up. That went longer than I thought it would, but hopefully it was beneficial. Have a great weekend, and we'll come back Monday and talk about New Covenant Theology some more. Grace and peace to you.